Lesson 1, Part 2. For 23 years, I had never really thought about sleep. Although even as a child, I always took a fair while to fall asleep. This fact had never really bothered me. Sleeping was just something which happened every night. Just another part of my life, like breathing or walking. Something I didn't question or wonder about. Even in a strange bed, on a floor, or in a tent, it might take some time, but eventually I'd always drop off. At the age of 23, I was finally going away to university to study philosophy. And oh my goodness, what a time of exciting change this was. I'd come from a sleepy English village that shut down at 11 o'clock at night. But at university, I found a whole new exciting world. This was a world of parties till dawn, late mornings and numerous free study days. Before university, I'd spent most of my life getting up at around 6:30 a.m. But now, everything changed. At university, there were many days when I had no compulsion to get out of bed at all. And just like the typical student, if I had no classes in the morning, I just didn't get up. I found myself often lying around in bed until noon or 1 p.m. or even longer. The second big factor in the development of my problem came from my social life. I found I just loved getting ready for parties, planning my outfit and makeup. And before the night of a party or social event, I would sometimes go to bed extra early, just to give myself a really long time sleeping, just so I'd look and feel really great the next day. The problem was that I might have lain in bed until noon that day. So I was going to bed only 9 hours after getting up. Not being remotely sleepy when I went to bed, combined with anticipation and excitement about the next day, meant that I was taking hours and hours to fall asleep. Well, before long, I had developed an annoying habit of not sleeping well before big parties. This habit then started to spread to other sorts of fun events like weddings. As you can imagine, I began to worry about this because the lack of sleep was really affecting my ability to enjoy myself. Instead of looking forward to fun things, I became anxious about future events and their effect on my sleep. Then came the fateful night. I'd gone to bed on an ordinary, not a particularly special night. I was just lying there when a thought flitted across my mind. What if I didn't sleep well tonight, even though there was nothing to get up for? Ooh, what a horrible thought. In fact, what if I didn't sleep at all tonight? This distressing idea actually began to wake me up. The idea turned to fear, and the further away sleep became. And that was the first time I noticed that simply worrying about not sleeping had the power to keep me awake. I still remember that night now, even though it was all those years ago, because this was my very first night without any sleep at all. I lay in bed next morning until late, just dozing, before getting up exhausted and irritable. I went through the whole day thinking about nothing but how much I was longing for some sleep. I tried having a nap in the afternoon, but to no avail. That night, I lay down extra early, so looking forward to catching up on all my missed sleep. I got into bed, closed my eyes, and tried really hard to fall asleep. But it didn't work. It seemed that the harder I tried to sleep, the more awake I became. And so I missed another night, and another, and another. That is when the panic began to set in. What was wrong with me? I came up with what I thought was a really good plan. I resolved to go to bed really early and just stay there until I slept. If I lay in bed long enough, all night and all day perhaps, I would have to sleep eventually, wouldn't I? Well, that was a disaster. I ended up just lying there all night and most of the next day, becoming more and more tense and anxious. Eventually, it became ridiculous. I may have been exhausted, but sleep was still miles away. For weeks, I kept up this terrible pattern, going to bed early, lying in bed for as long as possible, and trying as hard as I could to fall asleep. I was desperate. I needed help, and it was at this point that I made my first big mistake. I did what everyone advises us to do. I did what we're supposed to do. I went to see my doctor. Knowing what I know today, I still sometimes feel a little bitter about the advice given on that day. Sadly, I know that the same terrible advice given to me all those years ago is still being dished out every day to hundreds of fledgling insomniacs. I now know that at such an early stage, with just a few simple modifications to my behaviour, I could have broken that silly pattern, stopping this problem in its tracks, and 15 years of suffering could have been avoided. So, do you think simple behaviour modification was what my doctor recommended? No, of course it wasn't. She did what doctors do best. She gave me pills. The thing is, I knew sleeping pills were supposed to be bad for me, but I was just so happy that finally I was getting some help. I mean, let's face it, I needed them, didn't I? They were made for people like me, weren't they? This was a proper, doctor-prescribed pharmaceutical drug, and I honestly thought all my problems were over. Tonight, I would be getting some real sleep, for the first time in weeks. So that night, I excitedly took my temazepam. This is a benzodiazepine drug, also known as Restoril. And I fell asleep almost immediately. Hooray! But the relief was short-lived. I didn't wake up feeling refreshed and ready to go at all. I felt groggy and thick-headed. I was experiencing my first ever sleeping pill hangover. The next night was kind of the same. I got up in the morning feeling no better than when I'd missed a night's sleep, and it was difficult to work out whether I preferred the feeling of sleep deprivation or the hangover from the medication. Then, suddenly, the drug stopped working. I was able to stay awake right through the effect of the drug, and I was back to just dozing all night. And this is when I first experienced the worst part of having insomnia, the part no doctor or drug company ever tells you about. Lots of people will tell you about a sleeping pill hangover, and lots of people will talk about how bad it feels to have had no sleep. But no one tells you just how awful it feels when both of those things happen, when you take a pill and you still miss a night's sleep. As you may well know, lack of sleep combined with a sleeping pill hangover is horrific, desperate, and worse than anything that insomnia alone can make a person feel. Why do the doctors, drug companies, and medical advertisements never tell you about that one? Back to the doctor to explain my strange reaction to Restoril. No problem, she reported. There were plenty more drugs to try. Nitrazepam was next. Well, this was like being hit with a sledgehammer. I was out cold all night. I took the nitrazepam for about 2 weeks when the same thing happened. I started to stay awake all night right through the sleeping pills. I needed a higher dose, which I took, and which worked. I had had to increase my dosage after 2 weeks. I realised immediately that this drug had the potential to be horribly addictive, and I stopped taking it. I was one of the lucky ones. If I had not had the presence of mind and the good fortune to stop taking the nitrazepam of my own accord, I might have had a very different story to tell, and it might not have been a recovery story. Back to the doctor. This time she had a different suggestion. A new wonder drug had recently come out and was in all the news. This was the time of Prozac. Insomnia is a symptom of depression, the doctor told me. Take Prozac and your sleep will improve. Well, this was a bit of a shock. I had never considered myself a depressed person. But at this point, I still trusted the doctors. Prozac is supposed to make you feel happier by balancing serotonin levels. But as I almost certainly never had a serotonin imbalance in the first place, I was not destined to be one of those whose life was improved by Prozac. It induced what can only be described as a gradually increasing paranoia and a sense of dread, an underlying feeling that something was always very wrong. And my sleeping actually deteriorated. I'd had enough of pills for now, so I changed doctors. This new doctor took my problem very seriously, and he suggested a different tack. He referred me to a psychiatrist. I was impressed. But there would be a very long wait on the British National Health Service, and after 6 months of appalling sleep, I finally got my psychiatrist's appointment. I visited this expert full of hope, sure that now my problems would all be over. Well, it turned out this psychiatrist knew as much about sleep problems as I did about particle physics. Perhaps a bit less. He seemed utterly bewildered by my problem, as if he'd never heard anything like it in his life. He also offered drugs, which were refused, offered psychoanalysis, although he freely told me it was unlikely to work, and then he told me he basically couldn't help. At least he was honest, I suppose. But I was devastated. It felt as if I tried all that the medical profession had to offer, and nothing could help. I had nowhere to go, and no hope. It was at this point that I started to form an inconceivably destructive, but completely untrue belief. One that would be with me for many years. There was something different, something worse about my particular type of insomnia. And this was why nothing was working for me. I was different. I was incurable. And so my insomnia remained, and life went on. If you could call it living. Then, in 1996, something monumental happened, which was to dominate and control my sleeping behaviour for the next 10 years. I got access to the internet for the first time, and the whole world, with all its sleep remedies, was now at my fingertips. I started looking into alternative sleep treatments, pouring money into all manner of sleep remedies, including hypnosis, meditation, acupuncture, and a myriad of herbs, gadgets, and potions. But nothing ever seemed to make any difference. Every remedy I tried was supposed to improve sleep. But not mine, it seemed. It was as if my body was automatically rejecting anything that was supposed to help me sleep. Any herb or pill, I would fight. Any relaxation technique would wake me up. As I tested and rejected each new thing, one belief kept on growing. My problem is different. Is this starting to sound familiar? And when I got access to the internet, not only did I discover that there were literally thousands of new remedies to try, I also discovered a worldwide community of insomniacs like myself. How wonderful to find a whole new community of sympathetic, empathetic, well-meaning friends who could understand exactly what I was going through. We would write to each other by email and on forum sites. We would converse and commiserate, tell our tales, suggest remedies, and offer sympathy when they didn't work. I was no longer alone. There were insomniacs like me all over the world. Millions of them. All suffering just like me. Just like you. Every day, I would get up and go to the sleep forums. Just like people do now with Facebook. And I would look for any new posts or any new ideas. But a strange thing started to happen. Rather than be encouraged by the few success stories, or comforted that in comparison my problem was not so bad, I instead found myself completely identifying with these people and their terrible situations. All I could think was that my future had the same horror in store. Their fears soon became my fears, and before long, their problems became mine too. I began to take on their obsessions. I began to copy them. These online sleep forums weren't making me better. They were making me worse. You know, I still couldn't quite shake off the idea that there might be a pill that would work for me. I now had a young and lively new doctor, and when she told me about a fantastic new range of sleeping pills, ones that came without side effects or addictive qualities, I trusted her completely. These drugs were called non-benzodiazepines. My first non-benzo was Zopiclone, also known as Zimovane or Lunesta. I was so excited to take it, but what a shock. The hangover from this drug was just awful. And I'm not just talking about the physical symptoms of thick-headedness and lethargy. I felt depressed, hopeless, despairing. I only took it one more time before throwing it out. I'd rather have no sleep at all than black depression and despair. Finally, it was the non-benzodiazepines that led me to my big decision. I would never again take a sleeping pill. Ever. I had had years of experimentation and had not found a single drug that had given anything like refreshing sleep. Most of those nights had left me feeling worse than a night with no sleep, because the sleep I did get was nothing like proper sleep. The rule for me seemed to be that no sleep is better than drug sleep. My entire life was now ruled by sleep, the lack of it or by doing things to try and improve it. Every tiny decision I made, getting up, eating, drinking, exercising, socialising, even the sorts of films I watched at night, all these had to take into account the possible effect on my sleep. I had a kind of mental filter that every little thing had to pass. Will it affect my sleep? Should I take a drowsy antihistamine? But what if it doesn't work? Should I read in bed? Or should I try and go straight off to sleep? Should I get a bit drunk? Oh, but what if it wakes me early, needing the toilet? Should I? My life was a series of impossible questions and dilemmas, all in my quest to find a way to sleep. My social life was a mess, because I was just too afraid to make plans. I made tons of excuses not to attend parties and weddings. Even planning to meet a friend for coffee was fraught with danger. I didn't have a vacation for years. Just occasionally, I'd get a really good night, tantalising me with the sheer joy of a life with proper sleep. Oh, how good that felt! But this was very rare. Most nights were still spent getting nothing but a light sort of half-sleep, a sort of angry dozing, just enough to keep me alive. And, of course, on those special nights, when I had something important to get up for, I would get no sleep at all. My life had now changed beyond all recognition. All I wanted was to be normal. Sometimes I would pray. I would cry and rage, scream at myself, scream at God, scream at my husband who had dared to arrange a dinner party at the weekend. I was completely obsessed. At the height of my problem, every part of my life, every decision I ever made, was in some way related to sleep or the lack of it. Nighttime had now become nothing to do with sleep. It was about panic, fear, phobia even. It was about loneliness, desperation, tears. It was at nighttime that I would make silent pleas to God. I offered up deals to the universe, to exchange everything I own for the ability to sleep. I would have taken heroin if I thought it would make me sleep. I would have sold my soul to the devil if he had asked. Insomnia didn't just rule my life. Insomnia was my life. So you see, I really do know. And in the part that follows, you'll hear how I miraculously turned this life around. But before you listen any further, I need you to do something. You need to stop the tape and complete worksheet 1. It's best if you can print it out before filling it in. But if you don't have a printer, don't worry, you can complete it online. It should only take you a few minutes to do, so stop the recording now, because it's essential that you do this before we carry on. Please don't move on to the next part until you've done this. Okay, done that? Now keep that sheet in a safe place. You're going to need it later.